It's 88.9 FM, KUCI, in Irvine, where the opinions and views expressed in the next hour of programming are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. We'll ease into Talking Animals now with music from Ed Harcourt on KUCI. That's music from Ed Harcourt with a song called The Birds Will Sing For Us as we ease in today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, and streaming live, of course, on the internet at KUCI.org. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. First, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number and call us at any point in the show. We love to get calls. Other ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com and checking out our website at talkinganimals.net. And as Serena enjoyed ribbing me, I do like to point out that that's .net, folks. .net. All right. And before we move on, speaking of that, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rip-snorting rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. It's been the better part of 6 months since we launched Talking Animals, and we've been extremely fortunate during that time to have a long string of terrific guests, including in recent weeks, Janie Thompson from Friends of Abaco Animals, an organization in the Bahamas that tends to all kinds of animals, including feeding more than 100 cats a day by boat. You heard me. We also spoke not long ago with Ian Anderson, the singer-songwriter flute player behind Jethro Tull, and something of an animal expert and advocate, giving us his views on a wide array of animal-oriented topics and issues. More recently, we interviewed Dan Matthews, who's the Vice President of Communications at PETA, and not coincidentally, the chief strategist behind all the high-profile campaigns, who first became an animal activist as a teenager growing up in Orange County. Last week, we spoke with Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald, a highly regarded Colorado-based veterinarian, one of the stars of Animal Planet series Emergency Vets, and a veteran stand-up comic. Not only are all those interviews archived on our website, www.talkinganimals.net, thanks to the amazing webmaster and artist extraordinaire John Taylor, but our string of great guests continues today when we speak with Cindy Caraccio, the director of the Austin Zoo, which is not really a zoo at all in the conventional sense of the word, but rather an expansive rescue facility in Austin, Texas, that houses all kinds of animals that were formerly used in laboratory research, previously were performers in circuses and roadside attractions, victims of the exotic pet trade, so-called surplus animals from conventional zoos, and more. She also assists directly or indirectly when facilities ostensibly operating as sanctuaries, and again, that's in big, big, fabulous air quotes, like Tiger Rescue, which we speak about each week here on Talking Animals, and we will again momentarily, are raided or closed down or otherwise need animals relocated to new, different, better facilities. Cindy's also wonderfully outspoken on an array of issues, people and TV shows in the animal world, as we'll hear when Cindy joins us in a few moments on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest and animal news, and I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss. Announcements, observations, and of course, any stories you might have spotted. They'd all be most welcome here. That's 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And also, I want to point out that joining us today is our intern, Joanne. Hi, Joanne.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Good. And I, you know, for the purposes of KUCI, intern really means sort of a trainee. You're looking
exactly.
To get a show here on KUCI yourself,
yeah,
right?
Test and so, is actually tonight.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Are you worried about the FCC log?
Very.
That was I had night sweats about that
really?
For well just because you know it seems like hey if you don't get that just right
exactly.
You don't pass the class right. And seemed a bit scary. So
yeah.
Anyways, so Joanne's here to kind of see how this show is done for better or worse, and we'll maybe get some comments from her, and then hopefully with any luck next quarter she'll have a show
maybe.
Here on KUCI.
We'll
All right.
See.
Cool. All right, so I want to start off talking, as I just alluded to, as we often do here on Talking Animals, about Tiger Rescue, and that's a facility that's been in the news off and on for the last several months. Have you heard anything about Tiger Rescue?
Nothing. What is it?
Yeah, it's in Colton, California, which is kind of near Ontario, sort of broad stroke San Bernardino, and it's a facility that was ostensibly a sanctuary, and again, that's very much in quotes. where tigers and other retired cats went after they were supposedly, retired from film and TV work. There's other animals too there, but anyways, as it turns out, the place had been neglected for years and years, and the animals, even worse, were neglected. So the proprietor's up on a string of serious criminal charges, and so he's facing those charges. His court date got postponed again, unfortunately, recently, but most of those animals are still at that facility because they can't be moved for various reasons, some related to the legal proceedings, some because there's not places to take them yet. So an amazing man named Chuck Tracy, who otherwise runs a facility down by San Diego in Ramona, California, called the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, has stepped up to do the day-to-day operations of Tiger Rescue. But otherwise, everything's done by a battalion of volunteers who drive in from San Diego, Del Mar, Ventura, the other direction, Orange County. I've been out there a couple times. I hope to get out there again soon. And basically, they look after the animals. They clean the enclosures to the extent you can with, tigers and big cats. Feed them, water them, help repair the enclosures, and just make their lives better. So I always like to mention this on Talking Animals because they're always, always, always looking for volunteers. And it's a really cool experience. If anybody ever has a day that they could spare, a weekend, of course, is great. Weekdays are sometimes even more, not surprisingly, looking for people to help out. And it's a really great experience, and these cats and other animals, they're really, really, they're doing much better than they were, and they will ultimately all be relocated to different facilities, but it's a matter of enclosures and stuff at some of these places that have agreed to take them. So, if you, Joanne, or anyone you know, or anyone out there listening, thinks you can carve out a day to go help these animals out of Tiger Rescue, just email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com, and we will hook you up with the people who basically coordinate that, and I guarantee you'll have one of the more amazing, kind of cool, exhilarating experiences ever. So
yeah, it doesn't sound like a common type of volunteer work.
No,
like
it's not.
Rose float decorating.
Yeah, no, it's a far cry from that, but it's, again, it's not, it's not for sissies. I mean, it's hard work, and especially when it was really hot, it was, it's boiling hot out there, and you get dirty and whatever, but these animals, I mean, especially when it was really hot, some of these tigers, course, love water, so you could like hose them down, and they were just digging it. And just to know that you're helping animals who've had a really rough go.
Well, that's great.
So that's Tiger Rescue. So again, talkinganimals.aol.com if you can help out at all. Another thing I want to mention that they mentioned in the past shows is called the Animal Rescue Site, which basically you can go every day. And it's the Animal Rescue Site, SITE.com. And you just go to that site and you click on a little portion called Feed an Animal in Need. Mm-hmm. And because of the corporate sponsors and advertisers using that kind of daily visits to donate food, there's monies that are freed up to either help rescue organizations or help feed animals that are at rescue facilities. So I want to urge people to go to the animalrescuesite.com and go every day if you can and click there. I haven't found a catch. I haven't found a downside. So, again, if someone finds out of one, please let us know. But otherwise, try to visit there whenever you can, and that's going to just help feed some animals. So,
great.
And then here's a horrifying story, which I saw, I think it was yesterday, either yesterday or Saturday's paper, front page of the California section of the LA Times. Just the headline alone, I think, suggests it's fairly horrifying. Wood-chipped chickens fuel outrage against vet.
What?
Yeah. San Diego County's Animal Services Department has filed a complaint against a veterinarian who allegedly authorized a Valley Center egg ranch to kill 30,000 hens by dumping them alive into a wood chipper. Reports by the county, recently obtained by the Times, recount workers at the ranch feeding squirming birds by the bucket into the pounding machine, then turning the mashed remains with dirt and heaping the mixture into piles. Anyway, it's a long story, but then they finally talked to this guy, the veterinarian whose idea this was, and they were brainstorming, I guess, at some conference. So he says, Cutler denies he came up with the idea, but said he doesn't have a problem with using the machine for that purpose. Quote, no idea was too crazy to throw out at these meetings. Now, again, just to be fair, the discussion was initially prompted by what to do with chickens that were affected by the exotic Newcastle disease. But from there, he says, no idea was too crazy to throw out at these meetings. We were in desperation trying to deal with this disease. But then it goes on to say, the article, feeding chickens into a wood chipper, he said, quote, seemed like it was instantaneous and there was no suffering. I personally believe if it's done properly with correct equipment, It's a humane way of disposing of birds in an emergency. So anyway, yikes is all I can say without too much further editorial comment. But again, any comments you guys might have, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And then lastly on today's animal news, we're going to cut it a bit short because we have a little bit longer interview. But this morning, and before I headed over, I saw President Bush doing his annual presidential pardon. Of a Thanksgiving turkey. So, but I couldn't help thinking, given the Bush's administration policies on wildlife and the environment, that probably the turkey did not return the favor. So that's my hunch. But anyways, that's all for today's Animal News here on Talking Animals. And again, if you have any thoughts or comments, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So, that's going to do it. And I think otherwise now, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner with, as always, a piece of animal-oriented stand-up. Though this is something of a departure for this feature. This is actually comedy by an animal. And as you may know, Triumph, the insult comic dog who who launched his career on Late Night with Conan O'Brien, recently released his debut CD entitled Come Poop With Me.
Yes.
Have you heard it?
I have heard it.
It's hilarious, isn't it?
One of the singles. Oh, my God. Have you seen the music video?
I have, yeah.
There are things going on in there that just,
are mind-blowing. And also, of course, it is hilarious, but the vast bulk of it, as I'm sure you know, Joanne, from hearing it then, can't really be, has, you know, sort of language and or content issues that prevent us from playing most of it on the radio. But there are a few exceptions, and including this prank phone call that he places to a kennel. So this is from Come Poop With Me. This is Triumph with Call to Kennel on KUCI. Okay.
Yes, hello.
Yes?
Yes, good. What kind of dogs do you have?
I have mixed breed dog.
I'm looking for beaches. For a beach. Female.
Any particular breed?
No, why don't you tell me what you've got?
I have German Shepherds, I have Border Collies, I have Labradors.
Okay, Border Collie. You have a Border Collie?
I have a Border Collie mix.
A beach?
Yeah, at the moment I do.
A beach, okay. Now, Border Collies, they're, it's a little hairy there, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're pretty furry.
Yes.
Yeah, that's, that might be, a lot of work to, to find it. And tell me this. What the other breed you had was what?
Labrador Retriever.
Labrador. They're very obedient, right?
Yes.
Good, good. They'll do what you ask. You have a girl?
Yes.
Labrador? Okay.
Yes.
And is she big or?
They're puppies. They're 7-8 weeks old. So.
Well, okay. I can wait. But I mean, yes. Is it a black beach?
No, it's a yellow.
Yellow? Okay. I can work with that. And is she active? She has a lot of energy, yes?
Yes.
Because I'm going to run her ragged. I mean, I can go for like 6 or 7 hours, seriously. Describe her legs to me.
They're dog legs.
Dog legs, but they're long or?
Not for the breed, no.
Not for the breed? Okay, and is her rear end, is it... It's not a bony kind of rear end.
I don't think so, no.
Good. And it's clean, yes?
Yeah.
Okay, very important. You don't want to deal with that. Okay, so you don't have any small dogs?
No.
Okay, because I look pretty huge next to small ones. How long is her tongue?
I don't know.
What kind of bark?
She has kind of a high-pitched bark.
Can you
at the
do
moment.
It? Could you do
All
it?
All puppies do.
Could you do it for me?
No.
All right. One more question. How much would it cost to spend just 1 hour with her? You know, as opposed to buying the whole kit and caboodle. Do my business and, everybody's happy.
Why don't you just come in and look at it? I have a customer at the counter. You thank you. You have a good day.
All right.
Okay, so that's that's Triumph. You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM. I'm Duncan Strauss, and that was indeed Triumph the Insult Comic Dog with a piece called Call to Kennel, taken from his brand new album, Come Poop With Me. Comedy Corner is a weekly feature of Talking Animals. Some might even say a signature feature of Talking Animals. If you have a suggestion of an animal-oriented piece of stand-up comedy you think we should feature in the Comedy Corner, we'd really welcome this input. Please email us at talkinganimals@aol.com. As many of you know, we stream live on internet here at KUCI.org. Beyond that, it's a really cool website overall with a schedule of all the programming. It sort of tracks things show by show each day, and of course you can get an overview of the whole schedule. There's also CD reviews, a cool article of any given moment, a list of upcoming bands playing live in the station, cool guests on some of the PA and talk shows, and other elements. So that's KUCI.org. And while we're talking about nifty websites, we'd be remiss if we didn't once again mention our website. It's talkinganimals.net. And I need to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest is Cindy Caraccio, the director of the Austin Zoo. And we're not particularly pro-zoo here at Talking Animals, but the Austin Zoo is a far cry from what you picture when you hear the word zoo. It's actually a wonderful rescue-oriented rescue facility. All right, sorry. That's some late-night writing there. But anyway, but Cindy's efforts to help animals extend well beyond what goes on at the Austin Zoo. She's really steeped in the animal world and not hesitant to speak her mind, as you'll hear in this interview recorded on Wednesday. It's Cindy Caraccio on Talking Animals here on KUCI. Okay, joining us today on Talking Animals is Cindy Caraccio from the Austin Zoo. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Duncan.
How's it going?
It's going.
Oh, yeah? sounds like one of those days already.
Every day is different.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's, just for a little context, let's jump right into some history of the Austin Zoo and just kind of how it all began, and then we'll go from there into what's been going on lately and looking ahead a little bit, too.
Okay. Oh, well, in a moment of insanity, my husband and I quit our real jobs and started, at the time it was called Good Day Ranch. Mm-hmm. It was going to be a little place with some farm animals, and he and I and maybe one other employee could manage. It has since sort of snowballed. In 94, we changed the name to Austin Zoo. We've had anywhere from 12 employees up to 30 employees, depending upon the season. We are now primarily a rescue zoo.
Mm-hmm.
In the year 2000, we gained our nonprofit status so that in the event of my death from exhaustion, the place would continue to provide homes for all the animals we take in.
I see. And is your death by exhaustion looming imminently, or is it just a...
right now, I'm okay.
Okay, good.
I'm okay right now.
All right, excellent. But you're just protecting yourself and the animals, I guess. Right,
right. It's mainly for the animals.
That's... Sure. And so, Cindy, just to hit a couple other points that you sort of that were included in that. So basically, if I'm not mistaken, when you guys first began this, the Good Day Ranch was like 25 acres that you guys just were fortunate to have access to, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Correct.
And then a few years later, you somehow were able to expand it another 75.
Very
acre.
Good. You yeah. did your homework.
Well, we try. Okay. But so now, if my math serves me here, so it's 100 acres total, the facility at this point? Or?
Well, there's 100 acres total that the zoo would have access to.
Right. It's not currently occupying all that, but that, there's the potential for that as over time. Cool. And also, one thing I found in just looking around, is it still true that Austin is the largest city in the U.S. without a municipally funded zoo?
As far as we know, that is
wow.
still
yeah, that's fact. Interesting. So this was this, you know, sort of, I guess, incidentally or coincidentally sort of, you know, addressing that, but really, I guess one of the many reasons that you know, we're sort of interested in the Austin Zoo here on Talking Animals is that... you know, zoo in most cases, in fact, is you know, a kind of a far different beast, as it were, than what the Austin Zoo is. And you kind of made a passing reference to it by way of saying it's a rescue zoo. But maybe you could tell us a little bit more about, you know, what goes on there as opposed to what maybe most people would think of when they see the term zoo.
Well, although the animals here, people are able to see them or look at them, that's where the similarity with the regular zoo ends.
Mm-hmm.
We do not breed animals. We do not sell animals. Your typical zoo does both of those, and some of those animals wind up in very unsavory situations, even canned hunts.
Mm.
So we have a job here in that we have to educate people that there is a different alternative to how a zoo should function.
Sure.
So we've got to bring people in who normally would be opposed to going to a zoo at all. And then, but we kept the name zoo so that we could bring people in and then say, oh, no, this is the way it should be, and that animals need to be respected, and there needs to be a stop to the pet trade and what have you. And that's one of the things Austin Zoo does behind the scenes, is that we are actively trying to put ourselves out of business.
Well, yeah, because it seems like if just from visiting there, and it's just a, you know, really wonderful facility, but it seems that virtually all the animals there fit at least loosely into the rescue category. Lab animals, former circus or roadside attraction type animals, zoo, so-called surplus, stuff from, as you mentioned, the exotic pet trade. And then I guess other animals that have been, you know, further rescued from so-called sanctuaries. Is that
correct?
So it's really, I mean, in that way, it's in sharp contrast to any, at least most anything else that would bear the name zoo. I mean, it's really more, almost more of an actual sanctuary versus some of these so-called sanctuaries that we may get into momentarily. But it sounds like it's very sort of by design that you naming it that to bring people in that may or may not, you know, understand the distinction. But once they get there, the aim is for them to absolutely understand the distinction and what's all behind how these animals have arrived at your facility.
Correct. And we're, you know, evolving marketing-wise in that we're going to be tagging our name. It'll be Austin Zoo Animal Rescue Center.
Mm.
I think we've moved into the next phase of like, okay, this is what we do and why we're here, and keep playing on that.
I see. So it'll be a little more clear with the full, slightly longer name, but hopefully you'll still continue to draw people in that, you know, may not have any idea about sort of what some of the problems are in the animal world and animal trade, and then they'll sort of, you know, inherently become educated in that way just by visiting the Austin Zoo.
Right. But I'm guilty as charged. When I first started this, I had no idea the magnitude and the problem and what most of these animals and their ancestors have gone through.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because to me it seems like obviously the evolution of the Austin Zoo, and from what you just said, your own evolution, obviously go pretty closely hand in hand. How did you first sort of start learning? Initially, it sounds like the Good Day Ranch is like, hey, we've got some land, we like animals, let's sort of do this. But then obviously things have come a long way since then. And did you just sort of just learn along the way? I mean, did the evolutions of the zoo kind of mirror your own, or vice versa? I mean, which drove which, kind of?
Sometimes it's hard to differentiate.
Yeah.
Which one.
Yeah.
It's its own living creature.
Sure.
And I'm just kind of along for the ride. But I think it's correct, too, that we're also driving the zoo is
mm-hmm.
in its mission.
Yeah.
And I have several what I call epiphany animals. And
well, like what are those? Tell us a little bit about that.
What's an epiphany animal? Well,
yeah.
One of them, Mabel, who is a monkey, is one of my epiphany animals. When we first started venturing from the realm of, you know, farm and domestic animals, and like, well, there's no zoo in Austin, let's add zoo animals. And I decided, it always felt strongly about education, and I thought it was time to add a primate to the mix.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided, well, if I'm going to have a primate that's going to respond to being around people, then this primate needs to be hand-raised. So I started searching for a particular primate, and long story short, it was almost like doing a drug drop or drug deal, and meet me at the convenience store, and here's your little monkey, and just in becoming, it was the one of the, it was an epiphany. It was one of the most eye-opening experiences I've ever had. And
just how it works and how you actually go about obtaining an animal, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. And that these animals, you know, the baby monkeys must be literally ripped from their mother's arms and, you know, and thrust into the hands of some unknowing, untalented person.
Mm-hmm.
And all on the premise, okay, it's going to be a little surrogate human, of which they're not. And I was just so taken aback that I was part of that.
Yeah.
And so I was almost like, repent, repent, repent. I need to undo this.
Mm.
And so Mabel was one of my epiphany animals. And so I've become,
how long ago was that, Cindy?
I've probably been a little over 10 years.
I see. Wow.
Yeah.
And it sounds like there, you're talking about epiphany animals, plural, so there were others. When and what were the other ones, and what did they kind of teach you in that same way?
Well, another one was we have a Baylor bear mascot, a black bear.
Mm-hmm.
And we were approached by Baylor University, would we take their bear? He was no longer useful for their program.
Mm.
And I, you know, at first I was like, oh, flattered that they would consider us. And once we started getting involved in this, I found out that Baylor University had been getting bears from what is essentially is a bear puppy mill. They were churning out bear cubs for pets and actually restaurant industry in some states. And we're getting a bear every 2 years. So it was a disposable commodity, much like a couch. Okay, I'm going to redo my house. I'm going to get rid of the couch.
Yeah.
Redo the mascot program. I need a new bear.
Wow.
And I thought with the help of some other animal organizations, thought we had gotten them to agree that their bear that they replaced Bobby with was going to be it. And then they lied, as any good Baptist would lie.
Okay.
They got another bear.
Sure.
And they kept getting bears. And Shark, Showing Animal Respect and Kindness, another group, is now trumpeting the cause of the bears, too. And I think we're making a little bit of headway, although in typical fashion, they backslide on what it is they said.
Mm.
We're not taking the bears anymore at games. Oh, well, we meant after this game, we're not taking any
more games. Yeah, sort of a sliding scale of honesty there. Yeah.
Right, I'll give up smoking after this pack.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah.
And I meant that pack.
Yeah, yeah. All right, wow. And then has there been so in addition to Mabel and this bear, it sounds like there's probably been at least one or more other epiphany animals along the way, or?
Well, I have become a vegetarian,
mm-hmm.
almost a vegan,
mm-hmm.
because we have two longhorns here, but this one in particular, Shania, she was like, you can't eat my cousins.
Mm.
And so there's, mm-hmm. although we have to serve meat to the big cats that we've rescued,
sure.
I at least can make a choice. And she helped move me to that end.
Wow, cool.
So they all have helped.
They all have something to teach you.
Right.
Yeah, if you're open to it. Yeah.
Right.
Cool. And I guess just a couple references you made along the way of explaining the epiphany animals. I mean, when, you know, one of the areas it seems like you guys are recognized now for is when there are problems, when, again, so-called sanctuaries, and I'm vigorously making air quotes here,
mm-hmm.
Get raided, get closed down, get discovered that their you know, facility is just, you know, sort of atrocious conditions. It seems like you guys are often contacted to help out in one or more ways. Is that, has that become sort of a recent thing? Is that true? I mean, I know that, for example, Tiger Rescue in Colton, and I think you might be able to tell us a little bit about it seemed like you guys were at least somewhat involved with the more recent New Jersey situation.
Yeah, one of my colleagues took in the 24 cats from New Jersey, and
wow.
I was asked to go along, to physically help, the moral support, and to be another set of eyes to have witnessed this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, witness the condition of the facility in New Jersey, you mean? Or?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. I mean, I believe, even as we speak, this particular facility's website declares themselves a sanctuary. Well,
yeah.
It was Auschwitz for tigers at best.
Oh, my God.
I've seen some pretty appalling places, and this rate's probably in the top five.
Oh, my goodness.
And
it had been open for many, many, many years, if I'm not mistaken, right? I mean,
right, and admittedly, several people, agencies, dropped the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finding that that's not an uncommon practice, that once they were licensed in the 70s or 80s or even 90s,
mm-hmm.
it's just like, okay, that's over there. We're not going to even worry about it. And no one ever visits. No one really checks. And then it's usually some sort of twist or freak accident or supposed escape that makes everybody start looking again. And then they go in and, oh, my God, we've let it get this far.
And so would that be the same kind of description of what happened or what didn't happen with Tiger Rescue in Colton? Because that's at least a place that, you know, I've been to a few times. And, you know, it seems like the same kind of thing. It's like, oh, my God, how could a place be allowed to get to this point? And more to the point, how could these animals, you know, be allowed to be this neglected?
Absolutely. Someone was asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
No, you know, USDA or the state was, in both cases, or maybe each one thought the other one was doing their job.
Right.
I can't answer for them, but
sure.
But it didn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
And I don't understand the mentality of either facility where, okay, I'm in over my head. Why would you make more babies?
Yeah.
Why do you keep adding if you can't feed 10? What makes you think you can feed 20?
Right. Well, I actually want to come back to that point in one sec, but just also, do you think that with what's happened at Tiger Rescue, what's happened more recently with New Jersey, that this will shore up wherever there are holes or wherever one organization maybe is either not talking to the other properly or making certain assumptions? I mean, is this at least one upshot of these kind of horrible situations?
One hangs on to that hope.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds like barely. Sounds like very, very tenuous thread of hope there.
Right. What it's going to take is for the general public to stomp and scream to their counties, their state, and their federal representatives that something's got to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
They will not listen to people within the agencies. For instance, a USDA inspector who says, this has got to change. I'm going to talk to my boss. Well, they just don't listen to they don't hold any weight for some bizarre reason.
Hmm.
At least that's what I've been told by, you know, high ups within USDA.
Yeah.
That it's going to take, you know, a barnstorming by you and me and...
And anyone who
yeah,
will just,
who really
the more and the louder, it sounds
right,
like.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Wow, okay, because the other thing, too, that you mentioned that I'm just really sort of curious, and again, obviously, you've been doing this more than a decade and developed all kinds of kind of expertise, but are these sort of problems with, again, Tiger Rescue, the place in New Jersey, you know, other sorts of things that are smaller or even larger than that? I mean, with animals that have been basically sort of exploited, mistreated, or worse, what is the chief, you know, sort of problems or cause of the problem? Is it as simple as greed? Like when you say, how can, if people are in over their head and can barely kind of keep the place afloat, then they're just keeping making more babies. But is that so that, hey, we can charge, keep having people come and see baby tigers and get their pictures taken with baby tigers? I mean, is it as basic as that?
In some instances, yes. They have they're delusional. They keep thinking this will be the goose that laid the golden egg.
Mm-hmm.
This baby tiger will bring me X number of dollars in, and then I'll get over the hump.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, they might almost get there, and they go, well, what I really need are two baby tigers.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I had a white one.
Yeah.
Or a polka-dotted one.
Sure. Okay.
And then And it's, in a way, the public's, they each play upon each other's weakest, you know, emotional,
sure,
mental rung there. It's like Siegfried and Roy and the White Tigers.
Right, right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, to me, these are all just like on some kind of weird spectrum of, you know, again, some sort of a shabby roadside or other kind of facility. Hey, it costs you X amount of bucks to come in, another X amount of bucks to have your picture taken with tiger cubs. But
yes,
then, you know, if you travel a little further down that continuum, you run into Kenneth Feld and Ringling Brothers, or you run into Siegfried and Roy. I mean, they're, you know, they're a bit more lavish or fancy or whatever, but isn't it largely just the same thing? It seems like it's about dough.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so. And they, I don't know, in their minds, they justify this as they're conserving an endangered species.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then the public, I think they're trying to think that the public's perception is that they're being empowered, that they too, even though they don't own a tiger, can help save one by lining the pockets of these idiots.
Yeah, yeah. And then at the same time, there's, you know, with another stuff, you know, kind of whole situation that the Austin Zoo, you know, helps with as well, is that then you get these people who are just, you know, well, so-called regular folks, but who decide, hey, you know, maybe we should have a panther in our backyard.
Yeah.
And to what extent, I mean, is there just some sort of weird compulsion that humans have, like, to have a relationship, as it were, with an exotic or wild? I mean, what, you know, it just seems like there's a lot of people that say, hey, you know, yeah, I think we could, if we just, you know, set up space in the back, we can have a tiger or a panther or a cougar or whatever.
Or they think that this will make us money. This will get us out of our double wide.
Mm,
And, you know, if Siegfried and Roy can do it, I can do it too.
Sure.
And like you said, it's on a smaller scale. And then with the internet and these trade journals, in the overabundance of tigers, the price comes down into where just about anybody can play the game.
Yeah.
And that's the animals that are going to suffer. And there are just not enough places acting as a safety net to take in the excess when these places crumble.
Sure.
And that's the very scary, scary part of this.
And Cindy, do you think, does it seem to you that it's kind of escalating or accelerating in some way? I mean, you know, I just can't help thinking, as I've gotten, you know, just sort of more aware and just paid, you know, a bit more attention, that it just seems like now, you know, there's just more and more of these stories. Now, again, some of it's just like anything else, you know, it's a matter of exposure. It was there all along, but now you're reading about it or hearing about it. But I also can't help but wonder if some of these things sort of beget other things, and even, you know, talk shows, TV, you know, TV shows or little animal segments on talk shows.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do those sort of cut both ways? I mean, they're ostensibly, you know, educational, but is that also planting in certain people, like, hey, that's so cool and cute, why couldn't we have that such and such, fill in the blank?
Well, exactly. I mean, you'll have, you know, Jack Hanna on Letterman,
mm-hmm,
who's supposed to be, you know, an animal expert, and he's got on some, you know, tree kangaroo.
Mm-hmm.
And because he can manipulate it and physically hold it, and it looks so cute and fuzzy, that I think it does, no matter how much he's sitting there spouting out, "Dudes don't make pets."
Mm-hmm.
They're not hearing that.
Right. It's a pretty mixed message in the classical
sense.
Right,
exactly.
Yeah.
That just, you know, that, again, people are just dropping the ball as far as being responsible.
Yeah.
And you know, Mr. Hanna, I don't think, really thinks he's responsible for people running out and buying tree kangaroos.
Yeah, doesn't see the connection.
No, and I just, that's where it's kind of I laugh when he thinks he's an educator.
And along those lines, I think I just almost have to ask here about this new series on Animal Planet called King of the Jungle. Briefly, for listeners who might not have seen this or stumbled into any part of it, I've only seen bits and pieces of a couple shows, but it apparently is sort of a reality show, you know, sort of not unlike Survivor, others, where a group of people who are aspiring I guess, either animal handlers or hosts of their own sort of TV shows play this sort of game where they're put through various tests and tasks involving animals. And I guess one by one, again, like Survivor or something else, apparently they gets winnowed down, and ultimately there's a king of the jungle who, I guess, I don't know if they get a segment of a show or a show, whatever. I haven't really, again, paid that close attention because I just keep coming in partway through. But it looks, to me at least, what I've seen, pretty horrifying. I mean, I think you and I both, I guess, saw at least part of a recent show
right.
where one of their... you know, sort of exercises was to go into an enclosure where there was a tiger, and tape segments as though they were hosting a TV show. And at least once or twice, the tiger came right up and you know, it luckily didn't bite down. But it you know, I mean, it clasped on to at least one or two of the contestants, and it was like mind blowing. You know?
Yes, I don't understand. To what purpose did that? To what purpose did that serve? It didn't serve a purpose at all. There was nothing educational about it. It was ridiculous. It
yeah.
might as well have been a bunch of frat boys, you know, crawling the fence at the zoo and running around crazy drinking beer. It just
yeah.
it wasn't. It's to me totally disturbing that anyone in the zoo profession would be party in part to that.
Yeah.
And then the episode you and I. You're talking about with the tiger in the area.
Yeah.
One of the judges was someone who's supposed to be on our side.
Oh, yeah.
And he's actively participating in watching this tiger chase people, giving the illusion that it's not really that dangerous.
Yeah.
Well, you know, tell Roy Horn that.
Right.
And on top of that, the person that's providing these cats is one of the biggest purveyors, the pet cats in the country.
Oh, right. Yeah, see, I came in, I guess, late enough, right, and I didn't know the players necessarily the way you do. But yeah, that you know, just the levels of, you know, disturbing elements of this, I guess, just grow and grow.
Right.
But
I mean, you just don't. It's beyond my realm of comprehension that you would, like, get involved with some, be enemy.
Yeah.
And, like, well, he takes good care of the cats, and, like, well, so pedophiles take good care of the kids, but that doesn't mean you have him over for Christmas dinner.
Family gathering, yeah.
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 And let him be the Boy Scout leader, it just doesn't happen.
Right.
And you're not doing anything. You've sent them... the movement or cause back a couple of decades because we're going to have to undo the damage.
Sure, sure.
And the public's gone, well, the animal rights person was on there and thought it was okay.
Sure,
and
yeah.
now you're telling me it's not? Who's...
Yeah. Again, mixed messages to the nth degree.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I guess this, you know, we're just sort of getting near the end of our time here, Cindy, but... Which sort of battles, given just even some of the things we've touched on, in the world of animal rights or simply for better treatment of you know, animals or conditions for animals, are winnable in your view in the short term, and which may be winnable kind of in the slightly longer term? And which do you think, just given, you know, these kind of factors we've discussed and human nature and, you know, kind of porous legislation, which do you think we're just sort of never going to quite turn the corner on?
All in a bumper sticker?
Yes, I know. Well, you know, just take any part of that that you like, but I mean,
I was going to say it's the tiny victories, and if they keep building on themselves, eventually, I think, then we can move a little bit bigger of the chunk of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
If in your own city or county... you, for lack of a better word, aggravate your elected officials that pet store doesn't need to be selling anacondas who are going to grow to be 27 feet and eat the neighbor dog.
Mm-hmm.
You just, and if you can get that tweaked and changed, okay, that's out of the way. Next step, then we stop dissections in high school. I mean, it all plays upon itself, and every little bit you can do, the little victories, we're going to add up to a big one.
Sure.
And if we can get this House bill passed, it has some problems. It's not perfect, but it's a step. And if we can maintain language in there that, for instance, says, oh, and I'm talking about the Captive Wild Animal Protection Safety Act, or whatever it's called.
Okay.
If we can maintain language in there that disallows or does not allow for public photo opportunities with tigers or big cats of any age, then we might, you know, tap into that greed deal.
Mm-hmm.
Or, okay, well, if we can't do that, then we can't make any money doing the pictures. Maybe we don't need to be breeding all these cubs.
Sure,
but
sure.
If we could just...
Kind of a preemptive move in certain ways. Yeah.
And then in that, I have to go on the assumption we're going to make some headway at some point. Otherwise, I'd be totally drunk in the ditch, you know, laid out because I couldn't handle it. It'd be overwhelming.
Just be too hopeless. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And because that's obviously not how you are, and you're always trying to help, I guess I'd be curious, too, what determines whether you can take animals at the Austin Zoo when situations do arise, like tiger rescue, like the New Jersey thing, and other things maybe on a smaller scale? Is it, I mean, obviously you have space, but is it a matter of what kind of animals? Is it a matter of enclosures? Is it other factors?
Well, yes, size and space.
Mm-hmm.
If there's, you know, one or two animals here and there, you can sometimes manage. It's when, you know, the big groups come in, you know, the 24 tigers or the 36 tigers, like Tiger Rescue.
Yeah.
It would, these, you know, sanctuaries don't have 40 large cat enclosures sitting open.
Sure.
So it comes down to money.
Yeah.
And that, if you do build the infrastructure, you do get funding for that, then how are you going to maintain these cats? Some of them are going to live, you know, another 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
You got to look at food and so, and you know, and salaries for the staff and
sure,
you know, et cetera, lights and bells and whistles. And,
yeah, it's a whole large kind of complicated equation, really. Yeah,
exactly. It's just, you know, it's well, we do, everybody's supposed to be doing that with just their regular daily lives. Like, okay, I want to live in a 5,000-square-foot home with a swimming pool and five cars, but can I maintain those five cars, that swimming pool, and the 5,000-square-foot home on my Taco Bell salary?
Perhaps not. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I see. So, yeah, it really is case by case, and sometimes it's just that's the thing. I mean, it seems like Tiger Rescue and some of these other places, I mean, people are more than willing, including yourself, and you've taken at least one cat or more, but sometimes it's a matter of like, yeah, we would love to help. We even have some space, but we don't have the enclosures, or we can't take that equation that you just outlined for us and make it work when everything's added up.
Right, and it's not fair to the animal to send them from,
yeah,
you know, a horrible situation to something that's, you know, still grim.
Right, or just can't be sustained.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're not doing anybody any service, and then it's not fair to the ones that I already have, you know, to just...
Sure, then like, that gets diminished for what kind of care they can receive.
I mean, it's crazy. And
yeah.
Something does have to give, and it better give soon.
Sure. Well, with that in mind, since we are really now kind of at the end of our time, any sort of final comment, parting shot, hopeful words, anything that we can take with us, given some of the grim topics that we've touched on here?
Just people need to really be careful where they send their wonderful donations to really research.
Yeah.
One.
What's the best way to do that? Because I think have been along the way sort of duped by you know, very cool looking mailers, and then later come to find out that this place is sort of another just, you know, bad place sort of taking advantage of both people and animals. I mean, is there a website? Is there a resource? Is there any way to kind of check out a place before you write your donation?
Animal People News has a watchdog publication that kind of translates an organization's 990, which is their tax return, a nonprofit tax return, and kind of chops it up so you can see if the money's being spent, if they can maintain what they have. That's a great piece of paper.
So that's Animal People News and the 990.
Yeah, it's a watchdog
okay.
Publication that they do.
Great.
Then you can go to GuideStar.org, which lists all the nonprofits, and is supposed to give you a financial snapshot or pictures of, you know, you download their 990s.
Mm-hmm.
If something doesn't sit right with you, you're perfectly within your rights to ask for a copy of their 990.
Hmm, okay,
and
cool.
They must, by law, provide it.
Oh, that's really good to know. So just any John or Jane Q. Public can just say, hey, you know, I'm thinking of sending you a donation, but I'd like to see your 990, and they must comply?
Exactly.
Wow, great.
You can check with most organizations have to be registered also in their state with the Secretary of State, and you can see if they really are a nonprofit. Check on their websites. Is there pictures of a lot of baby animals? Are there pictures of people hugging on big cats or primates or something that you and I might deem inappropriate?
I mean, mm-hmm.
Really, really do your homework, because there are more what we call scamtuaries than there are real sanctuaries.
All right, and maybe that's a good note on which to end. I love scamtuaries. That's
yeah.
cool. That's our word for the day and beyond. So.
Okay.
All right, well, Cindy Caraccio from the Austin Zoo. Again, your guys' own website that people want to also visit, too, is www.austinzoo.com. And,
Or .org.
I guess mm-hmm. I didn't realize it was both things. Cool. And thank you so much for your time today, Cindy, and
for
everything that you're doing over there. And we'll
congratulations on your new one.
Thank you very much. All right, we'll talk to you soon, Cindy.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. Okay, we want to thank again Cindy Caraccio for joining us today.
Okay, joining us today on Talking Animals.
Well, that's the beauty of that repeat function. Excellent. All right, so that was Cindy Caraccio from the Austin Zoo, and the website is austinzoo.com or austinzoo.org. And you can actually email there, too, if you want to follow up or find out anything more or get involved or donate or anything. It's Austin Zoo, in this case spelled Z-U, at AOL.com. So thanks again to Cindy for joining us today on Talking Animals. And Duncan Strauss, you're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI in Irvine 88.9 FM. And it's time to proceed at the home stretch here to something else that's fun. It's Name That Animal Tune. And this is remarkably like any other version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related, usually just by virtue of one or more animals being part of the song title, but occasionally it's a bit more indirect than that. And like most renditions of the game, we can only provide a brief snippet of the tune in question for a number of reasons, not least that while the game hinges on a song being somewhat recognizable, we also don't want to stray too far for too long from the KUCI music policy. With that preamble behind us, but also noting there's always a prize for the first caller who correctly identifies the song. That's right, a prize, the song and artist, actually, in this case. So as soon as you recognize this animal tune, please phone us at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. All right, let's get started. It's Talk Animals, KUCI.
Duncan. Oh, I thought the show
we can't really get in anything more because it actually says the title of the song. But anyways, it's Talking Animals. It's Name That Animal Tune. If you know what that was, if you recognize it, call it 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Otherwise, we've kind of reached the end of our show for this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. I want to thank our guest, Cindy Caraccio. Again, the website is austinzoo.com, austinzoo.org, while the email can be sent to austinzoo@AOL.com. I also want to thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join us next Monday on Talking Animals when our scheduled guest is Julie Lofton, the director of a new documentary film, Best Friend Forgotten, hosted and narrated by David Duchovny, and examining pet overpopulation. So
Well, that's next Monday, December 1st. By the way, other great public affairs shows on KCI include just today alone, the Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talk Animals. Then at 5 p.m. we offer Counterspin, followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday, folks. There's great public affairs programs like that virtually each weekday on KCI, 8 to 9 a.m. and again 9 to 10 a.m. in the morning. Then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon, sometimes beyond that. Again, check the schedule on KCI.org. On the music side of the KUCI schedule, I also host a show called The Dead Air Zone, Thursdays from 4 to 5 p.m., so when you have a chance, please check that out. And again, I want to urge you to check out our nifty website. It's talkinganimals.net, and please email us with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@aol.com. I really look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease. As always, we're going to close things out with an animal-related tune. This is a band by the name of the House Martins with a song called Sheep. This is also 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. We recommend you catch the Blues Disease with Jeff Scott, which starts momentarily here on KUCI. And we'll catch you next week on Talking Animals.
So angry with simple life they lead, the shepherd's smile seems to confirm my fears. They've never questioned anything, never disagreed. Sometimes I think they must have wool in their ears. When you see a cane, I see a clock. When you see a crowd, I see a flock. It's sheep are up again. Gets asleep. I can hear my jumping on two trains. When you see a cane, I see a crock. When you see a crowd, I see a flock. It's sheep we're off again.
From Knockout Greg and Blue Weather, and you're listening to Jeff Scott infecting you with the Blues Disease.